Are we going to talk about Solo on this episode?
We talk about Solo. That's like the go-to. In fact, I think it's almost becoming too easy. Don't you think, guys?
But it's like a traditional standard. It's like a Benny Youngman joke. Everyone knows it. And
I just always have it running in the background whenever I'm doing a podcast.
What do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about work, Trav? Or can you talk about work?
Yeah, I can talk about work. We've been working a bunch. Oh yeah, we've been working a bunch this past week, working overnights and stuff like that. So I'm a bit groggy, but right now I'm in the middle of my deep sleep cycle. But I had to wake up this morning to go see my daughter's tap recital, so that was a lot of fun.
All right, lighting or electric? Are you doing lighting this week or electric?
I'm doing lighting. We're working on a Happy Madison project that'll be on Netflix probably sometime next spring.
Cool.
And got some good news about an upcoming movie that I'm potentially going to be working on. Fingers crossed.
Waiting for the Criterion Connection with this. you have no Criterion Connection yet, right?
No. The closest I would have is I worked on The Social Network, so Fincher's in the collection. Okay. So
yeah, like 6 degrees, kind of.
Yeah, worked with him, so that's another connection, I guess.
Yeah.
I think your daughter's tap recital probably has a better chance of getting into Criterion than the Happy Madison movie you're working
on.
I have to completely agree with you.
Don't hate on his work now. That's his livelihood. and you guys are both Bostonites, and I saw that Amazon Prime gave Manchester by the Sea residents Amazon Prime as like...
Yeah, if there was ever a town that probably doesn't need to get anything free,
well, if you go by the
Manchester
town,
by the Sea.
If you go by the town in the movie, then they need everything free, and they're all sad, and I know.
Yeah, but you know, that was a really nice promotional thing.
Yeah, actually it was. They're trying to sell their movie, I get it. There's only like 5,000 people there, right?
Yeah, it's a small community, so...
At least they didn't give them free firewood for a year.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But they're giving them happiness, there's that, so... All right, well, we have an episode, so this is number 15. Yeah, a nice round number, kind of. And as you tell, we had a lost episode a couple weeks ago, which is actually really my bad. I didn't have my microphone on, and so... I'm surprised you guys actually couldn't tell, but I did the whole voice or the whole episode with the Mac microphone, and I guess me being the host, boy, that just does not work. And I played it for my wife. It was like, no, it does not work. And I think a couple people said, is this ever going to see the light of day? And I think even you guys asked. I was like, nope, it's tinny and annoying and not happening. So so sorry about that. It was a good episode. Would you guys agree?
Well, I was really good on it. I don't know about Travis.
I was despite Matt.
Yeah, I see. I thought I was better than Matt, but, you know, I always think that, so.
Yeah, we got a little measuring contest going on. I was almost going to pull out a Colbert reference, but... So anyway, we have Matt Gasteyer and Travis Trudell again for... Let's see. You've been on too much, Matt. Actually, somebody told
Way
me
Way too
that.
Much.
But you're just available. That's... And then, Trav, you've been on once before, so welcome back, guys. No dumb game this week. We had a pretty good dumb game last time that I'm going to save for some other people, but it turned out to be not as dumb as we expected. It was, you guys got kind of smart about it. Smart asses.
Yeah.
We can't help ourselves.
So, again, last week we launched a Facebook group, Criterion Now, and you can find the link in the notes. Go join it. I think it grew a little bit this week. It's still not as massive as Criterion Considered. I kind of hope it never becomes that way. But I've gotten a little creative with it. I think I have some ideas on what to do with it. I think it's nice just to have that little center of interaction. And I'm actually going to do some like giveaways and fun stuff. It's just easier to do there than it is on Twitter. So if you haven't joined... Join, just don't be a troll, please. That's it's going to happen one day. I don't know when. So, you guys have anything to kick off with? What you've been doing, Matt?
Well, I sort of clamped down on Criterion Considered. There was a little bit too much discussion about movies that are not in the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, Criterion Considered is the Facebook group that I run. It's been really great so far. So I do recommend that if you aren't in that group, to come on in, request a join, and I'll let you in, and you can talk all things Criterion.
Yeah, 5,000 strong.
There's a lot of activity, and a lot of chance to talk about the movies that we're talking about today.
But if you want to ask if Quentin Tarantino's coming to the collection, just stay away.
There's plenty of places to do that on the internet. So this is one place where we don't have to talk about movies that will likely never come. I think one person posted about Shawshank Redemption.
Right.
Very good movie.
We all
like it a lot.
We don't
never, like... never coming to the Criterion Collection.
Maybe never say never, but not in the foreseeable future. And
right.
We would like all these movies to come in the collection, but after seeing the requests the 100th, 200th time, literally for QT, I think we've seen probably in the hundreds of comments saying, let's get him in. I think if they could do it, they would do it. And maybe one day.
But, right.
Anyway, Trav, what have you been up to? Well, I guess we just talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, working a bunch. We've been doing this thing called Thingmar Berg Days, where we are
right.
kind of going chronologically through Ingmar Bergman's films, starting with Torment. And most of them can be found, I think all of them. We're going to follow the Filmstruck, what films are in the Filmstruck app. Streaming service. So, that way we can everyone can access them if they need to. So,
and also you'll get the MGM films when you get there, assuming they're not released yet, so because they're on Filmstruck.
Yeah, exactly. It's we've had some pretty good responses and some people that are really into it, and so we'll continue forth with this endeavor every 2 weeks talking about a Bergman movie.
Yeah, Torment is a tough first one because he wrote it. I think I mentioned to you guys I like it. I didn't get to participate in the discussion, but I think that probably when you get past the 40s and into the 50s, you're going to get a lot of activity. With the summer movies, I think it's when it's going to hit the high gear. But good start.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well,
I have to give credit where credit's due. Matt is the co-creator of Thingmar Berg Days, so I want to make sure he gets his props.
Well, it was inspired by the MGM titles being put up because I haven't seen any of those, so I'm looking forward to seeing them in better shape than they were previously available. And I've seen all the ones that are on the main line, but I haven't seen these early titles, and I have a few holes in my knowledge. So we'll get there.
And also a shout out to Keith Enright. He does Bergman Film Festival. He'll just watch them, and he does this with directors. I think he's actually finished Bergman, and I think he's doing it with Fellini and others. So yeah, it's a great way to discover some work, but you don't want to binge watch. You know, it's not The Wire. Bergman takes time to appreciate, and I'll probably jump in there at some point.
Yeah, that's why we did the 2 week schedule, to give some time to consider it and think about it. And Keith actually posted to the Thingmar event the other day. I was super psyched to see him active in that group.
Cool. Yeah, Keith, hello. He's been on sabbatical for a little bit, but I think he's going to be returning very, very soon. And I'm going to get him on here. We've talked about it. Just actually, he was slated to be on a few times, but just scheduling couldn't get it to happen. So
he was on once, one of the early ones.
On this show?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Wow, it's amazing that you know this show better than I do.
I'm the Criterion Now archivist.
You are. You're the librarian. I'm actually pulling stuff up. Okay. Well, I should let you know that, and I don't know if you guys heard last show with our artist friends, but one thing that came up is that we couldn't find the artwork. This actually didn't come up when we talked about on our last lost episode, but we couldn't find the artists that did the July releases. So... and they're still not on, or at least last time I checked, they weren't on Criterion. But we did pull them up, and the Stalker cover was done by Thomas Horvath, and this was actually based on a movie poster he had done. And I'll put links to these artists, just because Criterion doesn't. I hope that's just an oversight, and they'll add them back, because I like seeing who the artist is. So he did the poster, and I think, have you guys come around on this yet?
The Stalker cover?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I loved it from the beginning. I think it's great.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I liked how mysterious it was. I like the geometry of the bolts and the nuts, I mean. I clicked the link earlier. You sent us the links earlier, and I went and checked out that artist's work, and it was very intriguing. Some very cool things with nature and geometric shapes and stuff like that, and thought it was very. I can see why they found it very fitting for this cover.
Yeah, and then the I almost said pickpocket. L'Argent was Isabella Morowitz. She did that cover, and she does a lot, and she has actually some very interesting like pop culture kind of art. She does a lot of fan art. So I'll put her link. I don't think she's done any Criterion covers before, but she has a distinctive style, and it looks kind of brushstrokey, but it's not on, or maybe a little bit on the L'Argent cover. But yeah, I like her work. And then the third one, Lost in America, was actually based on the 1985 poster from Bernie Leddick. And Bernie, I don't know if that's a male or a female, it's a B-I-R-N-E-Y. But Bernie is, I believe, passed away, so this is theatrical poster. So, and I think it was probably was touched up a little bit. Probably Eric Skillman did a little work on it. But yeah, I hopefully they'll come back. Did you guys notice that before we talked about it?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Do you have any opinions? Do you care if Criterion doesn't list the artists?
Oh, I definitely loved when they first started doing that. It's odd that they didn't. The June title. I just checked the June titles, and they have the artists. So I think this must have just been an oversight.
Hopefully, yeah. And of course, May with Clouds, you have to have the artists. So of course, we would know either way.
Yeah. So, yeah, it seems to be hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes it's right on release day, the artist's name is listed there. Sometimes you got to dig for it. It would be nice if they always did the artist and maybe even a link to other work. But
yeah, that would be. Or it would be nice if they did like like Criterion Current posts that talked about the artist's other work, because I think there are a lot of really interesting artists, and I've met a few and talked to a few like last week. But they really have a very diverse and body of work. So
yeah, the new Good Morning cover is amazing, and I went to that guy's website, and he's got great stuff, and mm-hmm. I almost bought one of his original works because it was so beautiful.
That's one thing that Keith was doing on his little blog, and I think he's gotten away from it just during this little break, but he was doing these little artist profiles, and I really enjoyed those. So all right, well, this week we had two new arrivals, Rumblefish and Tampopo. And then this coming week we have Jean Dielman, Quai de Commerce, and I'm going out of town, so I'm not going to have time for a 3-hour and change. Is that what it was? I forget the running time. I just know it's a long movie. I'm not going to have time for it. I actually can't wait for Jean Dielman. I did get to Tampopo. Actually, I've not bought Rumblefish yet. And I'm kind of. Have you guys bought it yet?
No, I haven't bought it yet. I have the old DVD version of it from back in the day, but I haven't upgraded yet.
And did you guys both buy a Tampopo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm on a budgetary lock right now. I can't wait to get it, but I saw it recently in theaters. It's fantastic. The transfer looks beautiful. The movie is fun, super fun.
Yeah, well, you're busy, too. I unfortunately, it was a busy week, and I rewatched it this week in about probably 8 sittings, so, which is probably not the best way to watch Tampopo, but if you've seen it before, and it actually, I don't think it hurts it too much, also just because there's so many random scenes, so yeah, I guess this is a good segue. You want to talk about Tampopo real quick? Matt, did you watch the Criterion yet, or have you just...
I did, yeah. I actually just watched it on Friday, and I saw the movie in theaters in January. I had seen it probably 15 years ago in a very, very bad version with subtitles on about 3/4 of the movie.
Oh, great.
And actually, this was one of the 4 films that I've written into Criterion Suggestions email address to suggest to them way back in the early 2000s.
Thank you.
So I've been waiting for this for a very, very long time, and I am thrilled. It's so funny, so sexy, and it just says so much about food culture, and it's just... the thing I was struck by on Friday was the music. The music mm-hmm. is so funny, like the use of the Western themes. And, it's just, you know, I mean, I could watch that movie every day and be perfectly happy. And the transfer is, I mean, the restoration that they did, it looks like it was shot yesterday.
It does. And I didn't see the version I saw had subtitles, but I think it was an old DVD. Actually, I don't even know if it was, it might've been VOD or something, but it was not good. And I think that does, I've said it before, but it impacts your experience. So, I mean, if you can't see it and it looks crummy, that's going to, I guess, affect your engagement. But yeah, the new transfer made a huge difference for me. I didn't love it as much as you. I didn't write into Criterion, but I paid more attention, egg yolk scenes.
Yeah.
There were some fun. Well, you know, I missed an opportunity. How do you guys like your ramen? So, Trav, how do you appreciate your ramen?
Oh, first I consider the bowl and then say a little prayer. But I'm a vegetarian, so I have usually either with tofu or mushroom, which is fantastic with a miso base. But there's a couple really good ones. What's that?
Menma, that comes up a lot in the movie.
Yeah, menma.
Bamboo shoots. Yeah. You live in a big city, so do you guys have ramen places around, like gourmet?
We do. Yeah, okay. We have a lot of ramen. We didn't used to have a ton, but within the last 5 to 10 years, a lot of places have opened. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in L.A., so I grew up eating ramen my whole life. And, you know, it's central to the food culture there. It's one of the kind of 5 or 10 sort of core dishes of L.A.
Yeah, I lived in L.A.
Major. I've actually read more about Tampopo in sort of food context than I have in movie context. It's one of Anthony Bourdain's favorite movies, so he's always talking about it and writing about it. So that's kind of how I first approached it, was sort of as a food movie as opposed to, mm-hmm. you know, some sort of cinematic work or anything like that. But I think it works on both levels.
It's I saw it written somewhere this week that they called it the best foodie movie ever. And this might've actually been on Criterion. they're going to promote their film, you know, better than Babette's Feast or, any of those. But yeah, well, that's one of the byproducts of watching it in so many sittings is I was just hungry all the time. And so I actually, we have, it's a pretty decent ramen place, but we're not LA or Boston. So it's okay. But it's right on my way home from work. So a couple times there was traffic and I just thought, you know, to hell with it. And I stopped by and, Friday night I did once and I accidentally parked with our local college's graduation. So I got caught up in more traffic just because I had to have ramen. But it's good. And we're going out of town this week and we actually already scoped out some ramen places. We're just going to Atlanta. But Atlanta actually does have some pretty good, foodie stuff. But, it's interesting. One thing I'd forgotten was the randomness. You have the main narrative, you have the opening of the restaurant and the two male characters, really the Goro is the main one, spurring her along, helping her along and getting this going and teaching her how to cook. But I'd forgotten that there's so many diversions. And I think that on this rewatch, you're divorced from following the plot. You don't have to worry about wondering what's happened, but I kind of focus on these little subplots more, like the professor in the restaurant that's getting taken advantage of, and then you know, it twists a little bit. So, and some work better than others, I'd say. Actually, the eroticism, the erotic couple, I think some that was great at first, but I think got a little tired towards the end, and the way it plays out at the ending, I don't know. Matt, what do you think about the randomness?
Well, I find pretty much all of them so charming that, you know, I think sometimes I feel like I'd rather just be watching the core story. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I just sort of enjoy how those little segments sort of flesh out the foodie culture-ness of the whole thing and give context to the ramen story, that it's not just about this woman's journey to create a great ramen shop. The movie is about sort of the love of food and the obsession with food that we all have. to a varying degree for some people. But I think that makes it more of a movie about loving food as opposed to just this one kind of ramen Western, as they call it.
It would be an hour movie without those.
And I think some of them are really great. I mean, the one with the wife that is near death, and the husband, you know, fights to save her. I won't give it away, but, it's so dark, but it's so perfect. And just, you know, so funny.
And some of the acting too, I say acting, but it's really eating on cue. I was just kind of, especially when in the main narrative, when the five people, when they're testing the food, you know, I kind of wondered how many bowls of ramen they went through, because a lot of those were one take, and yeah, a lot of slurpage going on. Actually,
The slurp sounds are, I want to be in that Foley session.
And when I ate ramen this week, I wanted to do it like they do it in Tampopo, and I wanted to drink from the bowl. But just looking around me, and it's kind of a medium-sized city, I would have been looked at, because we don't hold our bowls to our mouths. But and actually, it's messier when you eat with chopsticks, and it's not like right up under your chin. So, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. So, Trav, you got any thoughts on the movie, or do you remember?
Everyone might have looked at you, but you know what? The chef in the kitchen would have pointed at you and given you the wink and said, "Yeah, he knows. He knows what's up."
He probably got some collateral spittle or some chin broth deflections. So,
I saw it for the first time in January when The Brattle was showing it. I think I saw it the day after Matt saw it. I really appreciated just how funny it was. I was the whole theater was howling. It was a really really raucous good time. Like, you know, you would think that everyone was in there watching some sort of new Will Ferrell movie, the way that people were laughing. And, you know, it was just, you know, humor extends upon so many different cultures, and the appreciation of food, echoing what Matt was saying, you know, that was the thing I liked. All those little sidebars and segments and offshoots and little tiny stories really rounds out the idea of food as a culture, especially in Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, where you have the cooking scene, you have the how it's a sexual item, you have as a ways for people to communicate to each other. You just have all these different ones. My favorite little subsection is the homeless foodies.
Once
you know just which place to go to get the perfect this when they throw this out, or how this ages, how to break into the kitchens to be able to cook a perfect meal, and that part was absolutely fantastic. And it's an awesome film. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to show it to other people. I think that's the thing I enjoy most when I see something that I really enjoy, is the opportunity to share it with others. And it's a perfect opportunity also to do it as a dinner and a movie.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
People over, do some ramen, watch that movie. It's a good time for sure.
If only they could show it at ramen places. Anyway, we should move on. So I'll just say that I liked it a little more. I'd say I liked it a lot more than the first time. But I think that first time almost has an asterisk because it just doesn't count. I'm just like, basically, it was a WTF. Did you guys watch any of the supplements, Matt?
I haven't yet. I read the essay, which was interesting.
Okay, I didn't get to them, but I really wanted to. It actually looks like a pretty stacked disc. So, all right, well, we probably should move on. We are always short of time on this show, but we'll get to some fun stuff. Cannes Classics finally came out. It actually took longer this time. About 3 weeks, I think, which is usually it's a week or two. And we have an idea of some restorations that might come to Criterion, although I was surprised by the sheer number of restorations that are already on Criterion. Like The Wages of Fear, In the Realm of the Senses, all that jazz. And there's a number more. I'm not going to just read the list. But then I think the films that could come are Battle of the Rails. Have you guys seen that? Or René Clément?
Nope.
It's really the first French resistance film shot right after the war. It's a very important film. Very good. It's really about resistance workers sabotaging railroads. And then there's, let's see, it's a big list. They also had La La Land. A River Runs Through It, I don't think that's coming to Criterion, although not a bad movie. What else? Any others that jump out at you guys as maybe coming to the collection?
There were a couple Film Foundation or World Cinema Project films. I think Lucia.
Yeah.
Maybe. And then the one that most interested me, although there was no indication that it would be coming, is the Ballad of Narayama remake from Imamura.
I knew you were going to say that, yeah.
It's a very hard movie to get a hold of, and I'm very interested in it because I think it's Kinoshita, the 50s one, which is already in the collection. It's a good movie. It's a beautiful movie, though. Really, really gorgeous. Nice to look at. And yeah. And I love Imamura. His film, Intentions of Murder, is one of my favorite movies in the collection. This is a much later film from him. The movies of his that are already in the collection are from the 60s and 70s. And this is early 80s. Mm-hmm. But I would be very interested to see that movie, and I could totally see that coming on Criterion because it would be interesting. I don't know if they've ever done, other than stuff like The Killers and Lower Depths where it's included in one package, I don't know if they've ever done separate editions this far apart of the same thing. But it would be an interesting sort of comparison.
Yeah, it's too bad they can't release them together. It was in the box set, the Masters of Cinema Region B box set of Imamura, which is actually a great box, and I've watched a lot of it, but I have not gotten to this one. And in fact, I think I'm going to wait a little longer since we know there's a new restoration out. Actually, good point about the Lucia, was it? That's also a Cuban movie. So, and lately there's been a lot of Cuban connections. And Belle du Jour. There was another one here. Talk
Soleo.
Yeah, that's the other World Honda Cinema Project.
Okay. Yeah,
Trav, do you have any thoughts on any of these, or any you're excited for?
You know, going through the list, there are a lot of ones that are already in Criterion, so it's awesome to see that some of them have gotten new restorations. But the ones that I haven't seen are the ones that I don't know anything about, so I would be excited to see any of these films. Yeah, definitely Battle of the Rail sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
It seems like a very opportune film at this juncture in France's history.
Should also mention that it was on Filmstruck around the time Filmstruck launched, or shortly after, and I think it's gone now. It was one of the ones that was removed. At least it's on Criterion's radar, and that was in the Criterion channel, if I remember correctly. Another one I forgot that I'm excited about is Man of Iron, which is Wajda from 1981, and I have seen that, actually. I've seen a couple Wajdas. I saw, an old DVD copy, it's a long movie, and there's, of course, political overtones pretty much in all his films, but I would love to see that. I think we don't have enough Wajda in the collection, period. He's been on some of those Polish. Wasn't there a Polish box set?
Well, he did a war films, the war films trilogy, and then he did Danton too, right?
That's right. I forgot about Danton. Yeah,
yeah. Which is great, really good Gerard Depardieu performance in that movie.
Wasn't there a couple editions of Polish cinema from Scorsese?
That's not Criterion, but yeah.
Right, yeah. No, Masterpieces of Cinema, I think they called it. Masterpieces of Polish Cinema, yeah. So I think that this might have been on one of those, one of his, maybe Man of Marble, which is also good. So, Cannes Classic, but yeah, probably not because there's so many dupes. And I guess we're at the point where there's so many classic films on Criterion, and, if they can remaster Belle du Jour and sell it to France, remember, there's always a good percentage of French films in this grouping. They're going to. So anyway, I'm interested, not as jazzed about this year's selection than other years, but I think there's some good stuff.
Well, there's usually always one DVD only title that they're touring a restoration of and they're showing it at Cannes Classic, and that's always very exciting, like Ugetsu and things like that. And so not having one of those here is kind of the only disappointment of this list, even though there's a lot of interesting titles here.
Yeah, there might be some that will be picked up later, though. So who knows? I guess we'll find out. So, all right. Well, did you guys get to see the Ben Wheatley closet video? Or actually, do you guys like Ben Wheatley? Matt, have you seen his stuff?
I've never seen any of his movies. I would like to see actually all of them, but I've heard mixed things, and so that's forced them kind of to the back of my list.
Trev?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of his films either. I find, you know, it's hard to... It's weird. Usually when something new from a director comes out, there's some activity for them on streaming services. But even on streaming services, I have a hard time finding some of his films. They're usually for rent somewhere.
Right.
High Rise is on Netflix.
Which one is?
High Rise? Yeah.
On Netflix. Right. Yeah. And I think A Field in England... Well, it was on Prime. Used to be. It may have left. Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be. I had it on my watch list and it disappeared.
Right.
Yeah, I saw his closet video. Those things are, you know, they're just big burlesque show teases of awesomeness. Watching him grab the Zatoichi box set, just
yes.
shake my head like, oh, he went for there. It.
Yeah. And I wonder if I kind of thought, or yeah, whoever's taking that video, do they say, oh man, that's $150? Oh. But it's in the closet. It's fair game. I have seen High Rise, and I would say that it's I don't think it's I would just not bother. Not that he doesn't have talent, I can see a little bit, but I don't think it's really, and I'm just guessing you guys from talking to you here and there, but it doesn't seem like it'd be up your alley, or really many Criterion fans' alleys, but you never know.
He also did a Kill List, is that the other one?
Yeah, he did, and he's Free Fire is his film right now. I'm not going to say mainstream, but... I'm sure there are, and as he demonstrated, some art house sensibilities. A lot of English films, actually, and I can appreciate that. He's an English director, but yeah, I don't know. I think he did. He mention Mike Lee?
No, I don't think he did.
I should write down who these people mentioned, but it's just such a fleeting video. But Matt, I'm sure you have the photographic memory. Who did he mention?
No, I don't remember. I definitely do not have a photograph. I watch these things and then they go right out of my head. I mean, I think that this one is probably the best example to date of why people should not read into these videos about future releases. Ben Wheatley movies are not coming to the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
I mean, they could maybe, you know, in some distant future, or they'd throw up one of his movies on the channel, but these are directors, modern directors, they're kind of interested in. They're touring their new movie, so they're in New York, and they go to the closet to shoot a video.
Right.
Sorry, everybody, Moonlight is not coming to the Criterion Collection time soon. So, you know, you just watch them to enjoy them. Don't assume they are hinting at anything.
Yeah, actually, I just remember he pulled Things to Come, and he said, oh, I watched this when I was a kid. And I thought about you, Matt, because of what you'd said about some film that you'd love when you're 12.
Oh, The Great Escape.
Great Escape, yeah. Which actually I bought, and I haven't tested it out. But I wanted to scream, it doesn't hold up. Things to Come does not hold up. I mean, it's okay, but I think we've talked about it.
So,
and then I just pulled up the Criterion page about it. He talked about Grey Gardens, and I do recall some British films, but I didn't write it down. I always enjoy those. Like you said, they're a burlesque show. You're right. There's not going to be any Ben Wheatley. Maybe there'll be an interview with him on some other disc. I guess there wasn't a Mike Lee. Maybe that was my Sinbad imagining of it. But maybe somebody like that. Maybe he'll be on Meantime or not Mike Lee. Anyway, all right. Moving on. So, Ben Wheatley, nice seeing you. There were some fan pages that went up this week, and I don't know if you guys saw these. The Criterion Forum detectives kind of sniffed out that they were, this seemed like some parallels with Olympic documentaries of the 20s and 30s, which actually kind of sounds cool to me. Somebody speculated there might be an Olympia release, Riefenstahl, the documentary. And that these could be supplements, which actually makes sense, too. Of course, it could just be Filmstruck. And I think that a lot of the fandom pages that have been going up have been Filmstruck connections. So I'll start with you, Trav. What do you think?
I mean, if they they put Olympia out on Filmstruck, I'd be excited to see it. It's one of those movies that's always on my radar, and you know, I've never had the opportunity to watch. So yeah, that'd be great. I mean, yeah, I have noticed a lot of these fandom pages that people are getting psyched about just end up being things that are thrown onto Filmstruck, and you know, I appreciate me having access to them, but you know, having a few of those fandom pages turn into discs in the collection would also be really nice. But yeah, they had it on Laserdisc a while back, so I don't see why not. They, you know, they have probably a connection to it, and they already have some supplemental material for it. So it'd be nice. It'd be great to see that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty hard to find, too. I don't really get into the Laserdisc collections, but I just know it comes up as one of the kind of the sacred cows. So, Matt, and I haven't seen it, but Matt, have you seen it, or do you know much about Olympia?
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it's hard to call Nazi propaganda right. great, but it's great.
Right.
It's really, I prefer it to Triumph of the Will in terms of kind of pure movie-making technique, and although I also prefer Tokyo Olympiad, and would love to see, I mean, if that has the possibility of coming back with the upcoming Tokyo Olympics, and they could, you know, Olympiad is I believe public domain. I know Triumph of the Will is, so they could have both of those along with other Olympic documentaries make a giant Olympic box set.
That would be sweet.
My guess is that this is a Filmstruck thing. You know, I know they're this coming month putting up a I'm going to bastardize his name, but Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah,
they're putting up a short of his, and I know he had a Phantom page people were speculating about. To me, the fact that they're putting up a short of his indicates that this is preparation for a giant website relaunch that will integrate Filmstruck listings into the Criterion website. So I think all these fandom pages are not necessarily pointing to disc releases at this point, and there could be a lot more kind of changes to come on the website.
Yeah, I think you're right. And as a connection, Tokyo Olympiad played Cannes Classics a couple years ago, either 15 or 14. And so, of course, people thought, oh, it's coming back. But no, probably it's more of an Occam's razor. Probably the most simplest answer is it's going to be released by the Japanese ILC. Who, they have the actual rights to the transfer. It'll be released to for the Tokyo Olympics. And are you sure it's public domain?
No, not Tokyo Olympiad. Olympiad.
Okay.
Yeah, the Reifenstahl, I believe, is. I mean, Triumph of the Will is, so. I could be wrong.
Probably not a lot of people claiming the rights to those these days.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, and there's tons of releases of both of those films, and most of them are pretty mediocre because of the public domain issue.
Right.
But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Criterion go back to Olympiad. I think
Tokyo
releasing that. The Reifenstahl. I think releasing that makes more sense than Triumph of the Will. But I think it will depend on having good supplements in the way that they only went to His Girl Friday once they had the front page.
A box set, Tokyo Olympiad and Olympia. The Japanese IOC would probably not be into that. But anyway, whatever they do with it, whether it's Filmstruck, I love like those old vintage documentaries of all sorts of stories, even like the Five Came Back kind that came out on Netflix recently. So I would welcome any of this. I think it would be very cool. But a box set would be my preferred destination. So, all right. Well, I wanted to bounce Firewalk with Me off you guys. We talked about it with Caitlin and Michelle last week, and they had some opinions. They actually said that it wasn't worthwhile, even for fans of the series. I mean, they said it's worthwhile, as you know, any Lynch is worthwhile, but they said it just wasn't that good of a movie. And we had some comments that said it is in fact a great movie. So, but I think it's also kind of a strange teaser. It's clear it's going to be Fire Walk with Me. I think we can all agree. But you know, the it's also on the complete, I forget what they call that, that box set, the complete experience, which is not going to be complete here shortly. But Matt, what do you think about, well, no, I'm sorry, Trav. Matt went first last time. Trav, what do you think about Firewalk with Me? What does this mean? How are they going to do this?
You know, I always look at it from a logical standpoint. Like, they have a relationship with David Lynch. They're releasing a couple of his movies that he has access to. They want to keep a good working relationship with him. Obviously, he has enjoyed the way that they've treated him and treated his products. And I think, you know, with the timing of the Twin Peaks release, it would be a very good financial opportunity for them to release it. Now, whether they are able to piece together the rumored longer cut that David Lynch had put together, which, you know, they have a good working relationship. Maybe they will. So I think it's great. Annie Lynch is fun to watch, you know, and especially I just want to see what they're going to do with it, because I've seen the movie many a time, saw it in theaters, you know, a huge Twin Peaks fan.
Okay.
Would
you say the movie holds up?
I think I haven't watched it in a while, but, you know, I honestly think that the movie is not as deep and as rewarding if you haven't watched the series.
Okay.
A lot of people say, oh, you can just watch it as a one-off, but you're basically watching like an Inland Empire at that point. You have no reference and no anchor point for who any of these people are. So when the log lady is randomly running through the woods in a scene, you're just going, what? Unless you're a fan of the show, then you're like, yeah, log lady.
Okay.
So
Easter eggs.
So it's one of those. Anytime you tie a movie to any sort of television show, there's always a greater understanding of it once you've actually watched the two seasons of that show. So I welcome it, but at the same time, I see its purpose. It is a very purposeful release by them, I think, to generate some good income to hopefully get another World Cinema box set together.
That's a good point.
Anytime they sell that movies, you're always thinking, oh, it's a money cash grab. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that money's being used to get us something absolutely fantastic that otherwise would never see the light of day.
Yeah, and we see that in Hollywood. An actor does a mainstream movie just so they can do the indie darling and maybe get an Oscar or something.
Yep.
Matt, any thoughts about Firewalk?
I just have to think it's a director's cut. I don't think they would release this otherwise.
Huh. You see, the one thing David Lynch likes to, I know that there is a rumor director's cut out there, and now I like David Lynch. I would say I very much like, almost love David Lynch. But I know some people are obsessed, like extremely obsessed with everything he does, but I think
Doug McCambridge.
Yes. Yeah. Doug, but there are probably like gazillion cut possibilities out there. But I know that with other films, he hasn't liked to tinker. It is what it is. So I kind of wonder, and with DVD releases, he hasn't liked to, you know, Mulholland Drive was a fine release, but there were a couple of supplements. And, you don't see lots of, I mean, could you see this being like a 5-disc?
No, but I think he specifically said in the past that he wants to revisit this. So I think it's a little different than those other films. And I think I'm kind of on the other side of the cash grab, because I find this a little confusing. Because if you like the movie enough to buy it, you probably like the series enough to buy it.
Exactly.
And I just don't see why you would buy a standalone disc if you have this box set out there that's practically the same price as a Criterion disc. I think there has to be some reason why they think that people are going to purchase this if they already have the Twin Peaks set. And I think that reason is a director's cut.
It'd be for the David Lynch completionists, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And the rabid fans. And people like us, too. We'll check it out. I have that Twin Peaks set, and I've gotten through a little bit of it. And I have plans. I always have plans to watch a lot of things that sometimes come to fruition. But hopefully this summer I'll get to watch the rest. And then hopefully there'll be Firewalk. I guess this buys me time. So I don't...
There you go.
Yeah, Maybe I'll...
You have an end. You now have an end date in mind to finish your series by. You exactly. have a goal.
Yeah, it's homework. All right, guys. Well, let's. Should we do some short takes?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Go first. What have you been doing? Watching.
Well, I just purchased a new giant Purdy TV, and a couple weeks ago, and decided that. You know, I had to make it a momentous occasion to watch my first movie on the TV, and I picked Terrence Malick's *The Thin Red Line*, which I saw opening day, which was Christmas '98, I think, at the Fox in Westwood, and watched again in the early 2000s on a kind of mediocre DVD. And hadn't seen it since. But I bought the Criterion Blu-ray at the Barnes & Noble sale last year. And I absolutely loved it again, just as much as I loved it the first time I saw it, if not more. I think it's... I would go so far as to say it's my favorite Malick film. I think what I really love the most about it is just how unwilling it is to kind of give easy answers or make a specific point. You know, most war movies, it's like war is bad, or, you know, Saving Private Ryan, which came out that year, is like, you know, the sacrifices of the generation that, you know, that won World War II, and make it worth it, you know, that kind of cheesy bullshit.
Sure.
And what I love about Thin Red Line is that there's so many ways you can watch the movie, and so many things you can take from it. And there's all of the different character threads are so interesting. You know, it's based on a novel, and it's really literary. I mean, and it's also just stunning. It's a beautiful movie, and the way the island itself becomes a character in the movie is. Really beautiful, and it's a character as complex as any of the human characters that we see. So I mean I was really floored by it, and I think it's one of the best American movies of the 90s, and I love it and would watch it. Was ready to watch it again when it was over, even though it's almost 3 hours.
Wow, that's some high praise. I don't hear much high praise coming from you. That's sarcasm. reference to our Ozu episode. So, you know, this is one of the first Criterions I bought, actually. But believe it, it was before I went on my completionist binge a few years back. I haven't watched it yet, though. I love it, but I don't know what it is about Malick, but I just cannot muster the energy to revisit it. I know it's going to be amazing, but it's such a investment in time, of course, and attention and focus and... intellect, I guess, I'm never ready. I'd rather watch a Happy Madison movie. I'd never watch a Happy Madison movie. No offense to your occupation. So,
well, you know, the first half hour or so is kind of characteristic Malick, in his recent, you know, three movies. Right. There's a lot of moody voiceover and swirly camera.
Yes, the poetry.
Yeah. But it actually really sets up the characters and has a purpose, unlike, you know, no offense to people who like Knight of Cups, but to me, there's a lot more depth, and it really gets you involved in these people's lives and then shows you interesting things about what's happening to them. So to me, it's got a lot of those same characteristics, but both this and The New World, I think, very much have a reason for all of that style existing, and there's substance beneath it, and you really do get wrapped up in it. So it's not just, you know, a slog through, you know.
Yeah, I've seen
something
it
completely lacks narrative.
All right, Trav, what'd you see?
I've been kind of plugging away at filling in holes in my Powell and Pressburger knowledge. So the other day I watched Black Narcissist.
Ooh,
and
good one.
Oh man, so good. It's one of those movies where you kind of say, why did I wait so long to watch this should have been watched years ago so I could be watching it again right now.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. From the set design to the beautiful matte paintings and the storyline of the nuns, it reminded me a lot of not in terms of the story, but in terms of kind of like the theme of an ill wind brings madness to people, which is I reminded of Volver. With the idea that this wind that comes through this town is what creates all this craziness that exists within this community. And so just, it's always present in that film. It's either blowing through their veils or the curtains are moving or their hair. It's absolutely fantastic. Palin Pressburger constantly amazing me. I always consider it, I likened it to my wife the other day as like, you know, you speak the English language, and then you see someone who speaks the English language so much better than you. And that's what their film language is so robust. Like, they have a mastery of it. And I know that's been said many a times before, but it's the only way I could put into words just, you know, watching the first 10 minutes and just kind of being completely in awe of their ability to contain, control, hold your attention, point to the right direction, and completely enthrall you in their story. I enjoyed it very much. I think on the missing episode, I talked about Peeping Tom, which is another movie that I was missing in my, and this, you could really see now this, strong concept of, this, psychological torment that, Michael Powell was probably very interested. It makes me want to read some books about him to really kind of start to understand what he was thinking or what he was going through, because these films, both Peeping Tom, this one, Red Shoes, there is this concept of just like madness, these people being pushed to the brink because of either their emotions, not being able to control them, or being out of it, not in control of their emotions. And I'd be interested, you know, besides the whole British stiff upper lip thing and you can't show your emotions because you have to keep a brave face. But
Deborah Carr, I think, handles that pretty well.
Yes, very well.
And can I say something inappropriate?
No, go for it.
Sister Ruth does it for me.
Oh, yeah. When she first gets revealed in that red dress, it's like yowza.
Yeah, Sister Ruth. I have to stop myself because I could easily do an episode on that. I just love that film and love the set. Probably I'll be hyperbolic. I'll say that's the best sets I've seen in film for their period.
Yeah, and the Technicolor is spectacular.
Yeah, and the matte paintings too. Great matte paintings. Great. One of the best technical achievements, I think, in film. So, all right.
Yep.
Well, mine is interesting, but not quite as lofty as those two. Mine is Dry Summer. That's the Turkish movie on the WCP, and I forget the director, but I'm going to look it up as we speak. And actually, Dave talked about this a few episodes ago, and kind of teased. It was WCP film that I'd been waiting to watch and I wanted to watch. Actually, we were going to talk about it on Close Up, and we still might, but that's put on hold, so I went ahead and just dived in. That is by Metin Erksan, so I don't know what else he's done. But Dry Summer is it's a really well-done tale about country life and in Turkey, and there's some social class issues, but it's... At its essence, it's really just about an anti-hero, and that's really what Dave pointed out. And I did just take great pleasure in watching. I believe his name is Osman. Was that right? Just seeing how terrible he was, and actually, one thing I want to kind of jump on what Dave said. He said that you could almost see that he believed what he was doing was right. And I do see that, and I don't want to get into spoilers, but I can see that he did feel he was justified to some extent, but he also just was a scumbag. And I think he was aware of that and just did not care. So aside from what the plot narrative is that he's withholding water from others just because it's on his land, he does some other things that are pretty scoundrelry. That's not a word, but it works. So, have you guys fans of Dry Summer?
I love this movie. It's my favorite in the box. He's such a fucking asshole.
He's diabolical. I mean,
he's just the worst person. I actually
he's like, worse than Doug.
It's hard to think of villains.
Doug's gonna love
in the Criterion Collection that are as despicable as he is. I mean, he's just. I wanted to just climb into the movie and smack him because he's really just awful. But the movie, I think, works because the direction is so tight. And I mean, it's almost like the ending sequence is almost Hitchcockian mm-hmm. in its intensity and level of sophisticated suspense. It's a great movie. I'm really glad to have seen it.
Yeah, it's something. And the only one I haven't seen from that set is now, Trances and Tukibuki. So, but I of the ones I've seen, I'd agree that it's actually far and away the best. But I've heard pretty good things about Tukibuki, so that might be the one I'll tackle next.
It's very like Godardian.
Oh, really?
Distinctly African. With a distinctly African perspective. It's an interesting film. I didn't love it, but I could see some people's love for it.
Yeah, I did. I know there's a colonial edge to it. So,
yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, how about talking some Filmstruck? Ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, well, one thing, and I don't know who got this email, but did you guys get the email that they're beta testing Roku? You hear that?
I did not.
I have a feeling a few people will be happy online. In case you haven't heard, people want Roku Filmstruck.
I had no idea.
Yeah, huh. It's something that's desired. So I don't do Roku. I did forward it to a friend that does Roku. Do you guys, are you Roku-ish?
No, Apple TV.
Yeah, I have a super old Roku, but just watch Amazon on it.
Yeah, and actually, I think it's perfect on Amazon. I really, really like it. There were some bugs. Actually, there still are some bugs, but it's gotten better. All right, well, Criterion, the main channel. And you know what? It's time for Speed Round. you guys probably
yeah,
saw this coming.
Yeah.
You guys ready for Speed Round?
Let's do it.
Ready.
All right. Now, 5 seconds.
Let me look at this.
5 seconds. You guys got to be quick here. Are you sure you're ready?
Let's do this.
All right. I'll try. Maybe I should have gotten that cup of coffee.
I can hear your butt clenching, Travis. So
that was my knuckles cracking.
Five seconds.
They sound very similar.
That's great TMI. All right. We have Palme d'Or winners at Cannes. Great curated list here. So, Matt, Rome Open City. 5 seconds.
Oh, I've already done this in the speed round. It's good. Well, watch it.
That doesn't count. This is no. Oh, music's playing. Music is playing. Trav, Rome Open City.
Never seen it. Really want to.
Oh, you have to. Come on. All right. Trav, Brief Encounter.
Oh, fantastic. One of the best love story. Carol.
Yeah. Matt.
I love that movie. It's my favorite Lean. It's beautiful.
Yeah, we should be doing this podcast at a train station. All right, I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, Matt. Miss Julie.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty good. It's very depressing, though. It tied with Miracle in Milan.
Okay. Trav, Miss Julie, you seen it?
I have not seen it, but it's now on my list after watching Torment.
Okay, yeah. I talked about it a few episodes ago, so I'll leave that there. Othello, Trav, Orson Welles.
I have not seen Orson Welles' Othello, so I have nothing to say.
Well, that was you said that in 5 seconds, so that's good. Matt, Othello.
It's very good, but this is the wrong cut, so don't watch it.
Yes, it's delayed. Wait. It'll be coming, a better version. All right, Matt, Wages of Fear.
Oh, so good, Clouseau. It's so suspenseful.
Trav?
One of the tensest movies I've ever seen until I saw the remake Sorcerer. That is even more intense.
I was actually going to say, one of the best remakes of a classic film, which is very, very rare, but both worthwhile. Trav, Gate of Hell.
Gate of Hell. I've had that one on my shelf forever, and I have not watched it.
I'll just say same. Matt, Gate of Hell.
It's very good. It's very pretty. I was surprised that it won Cannes. It's not that good.
Okay. All right, The Cranes Are Flying. Matt.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Technically, just a virtuoso film.
Trav?
I have to say the same thing. A film school staple that is worth its status.
Yes. That actress, great performance. We just lost her somewhat recently. And Kal Zatov is just phenomenal. Let's see here. Okay, Black Orpheus. Travis.
Fantastic movie. Awesome soundtrack. I have it on vinyl.
Cool. Matt.
I'm not as big of a fan of the movie, but I am a huge fan of the soundtrack.
Okay, I'll just say I haven't seen it yet, I know. And this one is the same. I'll just say I haven't seen Viridiana. So, Matt, Viridiana.
I like it. I don't have much to say about it. I'm not a big Buñuel guy.
Well, you still took more than 5 seconds, so you had too much to say about it.
It kind of left my mind. That's why I was struggling to come up with anything to say about it.
You're just disproving your thesis. Travis, Viridiana. Is that how you say it?
I don't know. Viridiana? Yeah, no, I have not seen that one. That's one of my Buñuel holes.
Mine too. Umbrellas of Cherbourg. Travis.
Oh, come on. That movie's awesome. The colors, everything's fantastic about that film.
Matt, Umbrellas?
Yeah, that's one of the few perfect movies, I think.
All right, well, you're both wrong because you were supposed to sing your response. the Tin Drum, Matt.
I don't like that movie. I mean, I like it okay. It's a little... It just feels weird. It's just a weird movie.
Travis.
That movie made me fear having children.
Yeah, it is a weird movie, but that kid's got to be screwed up from that.
Yeah.
The Tree of Wooden Clogs. I think we've already talked about that before, haven't we, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. It's okay.
Travis?
Haven't seen it. Oh, wait, but I have a funny story real quick.
Well, damn, we're in speed rounds.
This is in speed round.
Table it. We'll come back to it. It's long. It's interesting.
Too long.
It's too long.
My teacher called me a peasant when I laughed at it.
It's about peasants. Paris, Texas. Matt.
Great. Great movie. Great just sort of American movie. Movie about America.
And Travis.
Robbie Mueller, man. That's all I'm going to say about that. It was beautiful.
And I'll add Harry Dean Stanton. Probably a difficult guy, but tremendous actor. The Mission, Roland Joffe. Travis.
Oh, that was a surprise view for me. I loved it back in the day. I borrowed it from my grandfather. He had it on VHS.
Matt, seen it?
Haven't seen it. Nope.
I have seen it, and yes, that one caught me off guard. Would love to see that on Criterion. Make it happen. Under the Son of Satan by Pilat. Matt. Pilat.
Haven't seen it.
Trav?
Haven't seen it, but with a name like Under the Son of Satan, it really draws my attention.
Everybody, Trav is satanic. There you go.
Yes. Hail Satan.
I've been wanting to get this for it's on Region B and Region A, and it's just been expensive, so I'm going to try to get to see this. The Best Intentions, Billy August, 1992. Trav, you seen it?
Never seen it.
Matt?
No, that's in my queue. It was about Ingmar Bergman's family, right?
Oh, I don't know. That sounds cool, though. Maybe something for Thingmar Berg days.
Yeah, it's also at the end of the Ingmar Bergman Filmstruck page.
Yeah, it's written by Bergman, and it's about his parents' courtship.
All right, Taste of Cherry. Matt.
Great movie. It's probably mid-range for me for Kiarostami, but that's better than 98% of movies in existence anyway, so...
Travis.
I like that. I recently watched that, liked it a lot. The ending left me baffled, but upon reading, I liked it.
Yeah, I'll just say, I think it's... I want some Iranian upgrades. It's just a bummer that we're not getting any. Dancer in the Dark, Travis.
It is beautiful, and she sings. No, it's good. I enjoyed it very much.
All right, Matt?
I love that movie. It's very good.
All right, you were supposed to tap on something, and that turns into music. So, actually, I don't like that movie. I'll get into that another time. And then finally, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Matt?
Haven't seen it. More to.
Trav?
Haven't seen it.
It's okay. So that's the end of the speed round. So Palme d'Or winners. That's I'd say that's a pretty pretty great category. Well done, Filmstruck.
It's a nice one.
Yep.
And then the other main channel, actually good timing with your short take, Travis, was Sister Acts, because Black Narcissus is a big movie here. And this is not going to be a speed round, but I'll just list them here. Viridiana, The Magdalene Sisters, which I thought was pretty good.
Marie, yeah, I enjoyed that movie.
Marie's Story, They Killed Sister Dorothy, Rivette's The Nun, which I haven't seen, but it's any Rivette on the channel is great. And then Zinnemann's The Nun Story. The Nun's Story. So, any thoughts on any of these, Travis?
Nun's Story, is that the Ingrid Bergman one? Is she in that one?
No.
No?
It's Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, Audrey Hepburn.
Peter right. Finch. So, okay. 1959. It's 2.5 hours, so that means that's not happening for me this week.
I'm just disappointed Sister Act and Sister Act 2 isn't in this list. I mean, come on. How can you have a nun story without those?
Or, you know, there are some good nun movies, though.
Actually, the Devils.
That should be in God, there, too. The Devils should lead this off. Now, of course, that's another discussion. Matt, any comments?
No, I haven't seen any of the non-Criterion ones on here. I was curious to see if the Rivette film was going to have Criterion branding, but it does not.
Yeah, I don't know what's the deal with that. It's also it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, so I think I know what to expect with that. All right, well, let's get to the Criterion channel. Interesting week, and actually I think we'll have some Von Trier to talk about here. But the short feature was The Seahorse by Jean Penlev and L'Adolante by Jean Vigo. So two Jeans, both from the 30s. And actually, if you caught our French series, Vigo and Penlev were contemporaries, and they actually were buddies. They, or at least I think they were buddies. They collaborated a little. I think Penlev was kind of a mentor for Vigo for his documentary work. I forget. It's been a while. So, Matt, I'm sure you've seen L'Adolante. Do you have any thoughts about this short feature?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite of this sort of phase of the Penlev box set.
Is that how you say it?
I'm not sure.
It sounds better.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's an accent on the E, so I went for it.
There you go.
That whole box is really fun. I do recommend it to people. There's some really great science documentaries that he made on it that are super awesome. But this is just a nice little, underwater kind of, what's the guy, the famous
Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah, Cousteau. It's kind of like a Cousteau style. If you like Life Aquatic, you know, this is worth watching. And L'Adolante is great, of course.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We don't really have to say that about L'Adolante. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen this Penlev. I've watched about half that set. That's one kind of like Brackage. You can't binge watch those, but
no.
they're definitely worthwhile.
Is this from the Sciences Fiction box set?
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it is. So, do you have any thoughts on either of those, Travis?
I haven't seen any of the Penlev films. That's always been one that's been on my radar to pick up, but I don't think it will ever come to blue. So I think I'll definitely pick that up on the next sale. But L'Adolante is stunning. I watched that recently, and it was it took my breath away just in how beautiful it was. And yeah, it was a fantastic film. I can see why it gets the praise it deserves.
Yeah, I think you're pretty safe in picking up the sciences fiction. Or
correct.
Yeah, I think you're.
Yeah,
they're nature documentaries. I think there's some experimental ism in there. But they're pretty remarkable, especially for the time. They are something special. We also had a digital spine. Actually, I had two digital spines this week. So the first one was Blowout, the Nancy Allen, John Travolta, De Palma movie. So any thoughts on Blowout, Travis?
Yeah, I had a good buddy in college who's a huge, huge fan of that movie and all of his films, and I was never, besides the fact of Carrie and stuff like that, I never was a big fan. So
he showed me that, and that made me turn the corner on appreciating Demi, not Demi, De Palma a lot more. So, yeah.
I would love to see this that. Directed by Demi.
Blowout awesome. By Demi.
Blowout with singing.
No, it's good, but it's very good. I enjoyed it. And then, you know, obviously the comparisons do blow up, but it's nice to have both in the collection now so you can put them side by side.
Yeah. Matt, what do you think about Blowout?
Yeah, I love this movie. I think it's a really great movie for its time, sort of looking at the transition in both filmmaking and sort of just political attitude in America from the 70s to the 80s. It's kind of like the transition from the post-Watergate hangover into the greed kind of, you know, Wall Street 1980s.
And
I think it works. Yeah, I think it works really... really nicely in that regard.
Cool. And then the other digital spine was Zatoichi, which is a big one. If you are not lucky enough to be Ben Wheatley and be able to snag a copy from the closet, although, you know, the Zatoichi films have been on Hulu and been on Filmstruck, and they're really I actually was kind of disappointed by the box set special features. You know, they have a disc with the last movie and then the supplements, but there weren't a lot of volume, so. But either way, if you want to watch the Zatoichi and for some reason haven't picked up that big brick yet, then there you go.
That box was about the box, not about what was in it necessarily.
Absolutely.
So, the art is just so beautiful.
And the digital spine kind of carries less weight. Would you agree?
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Physically and emotionally, it carries less weight.
Yes. You're not going to get a workout from this one.
No.
Travis, any thoughts about Zatoichi?
Yeah, it's a really fun genre study, and the character is great. I can see how he's the Japanese James Bond in terms of putting him in all kinds of different situations and sees how he gets out. I actually think that character would be a great thing to revisit in a more modern kind of concept. This is, you know, Blind Swordsman. I did appreciate the Beat Takeshi version of it a lot.
I was about to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I like that so much. I was like, I wish he kind of continued and made a few more of those, because those were, they're super fun. They are. They are just fun to watch.
There was a female one, which I haven't seen, so... It sounds like an interesting take, but yeah, we did a whole episode on Zatoichi for close-up, so I'll leave it there. But the Friday night double feature was The Element of Crime in Europa, and if you guys listened to last week, there was some Von Trier hate, and I think there's probably Von Trier hate every 2-3 weeks on the show, every 2-3 episodes. It's just something, and I mentioned earlier, I don't like Dancer in the Dark, but that doesn't mean that I don't like Von Trier. I just thought that was, I don't know. I'm not going to get into it. I will get into it. I didn't like the Bjorkishness. I thought it was just a little too fanciful. And then with the other Von Trierisms about the misogyny, yeah, it just didn't sit well with me. So, and my wife hates it too. So maybe I'm influenced by that. So Matt, and I haven't seen these two. So this is, maybe, I don't know if it's worth exploring. I'm mixed on Von Trier, but what do you think, Matt?
I'm decidedly mixed on him, too. Can't stand him as a person and do not like his provocateur instincts. I love Bjork, though, so that's a big part of why I like Dancer in the Dark. But I don't like either one of these movies.
Okay.
The element of crime is probably the... ugliest, intentionally ugly movie that I've ever seen. It's just completely drained of any sort of attractiveness. It's a really weird movie. But these are very much Von Trier films. So if you like Von Trier, you'll like them. If you don't, you're not going to be a big fan.
Travis.
I haven't seen Element of Crime. Yeah, Von Trier is polarizing, but he sets out to be polarizing. You know right. what I mean? It's like, it's not like he's trying to win you over.
Mm-hmm.
But Europa, I like a lot. I wrote an essay on it for graduate studies class, and I likened it to to von Trier really not letting Germany forget about what has happened in World War II. You know, the whole concept of the film and the what's going on in it and the train ride. You know, I think he's taking them to task and making sure that they don't forget about things. But at the same time, it's a really hard film to kind of wrap your head around in terms of what he's trying to say and what he's trying to do and what his goals are. But it is to once again evoke some sort of response, which, you know, I appreciate to a degree that, you know, he constantly wants the audience to respond in some way, whether it to be with anger or with fear or with disgust. So he is always trying to be a provocateur. So give it to him for that.
Yeah, Europa lost the Palme d'Or to Barton Fink. And when von Trier lost, he flipped off the judges and stormed out of the building when it was announced.
Dude needs to just chill at Cannes. His life would go a lot better if he would chill at Cannes. Yeah, no, I'm on record a huge fan of Antichrist, which is, I know I'm probably in the minority there. Just love that movie. And Breaking the Waves. And then the rest, yeah, it's okay. I like The Five Obstructions. I think that's
Yeah, that's great.
Interesting.
Oh, that's experience. A super fun movie.
Yeah. So, okay, well, that is... Oh, well, there was one more thing that Filmstruck. There was a dump of movies from Claude Autant-Lara. And I think there was, like, maybe four films. I forget how many. Do either of you guys have a familiarity with this filmmaker or anything? The Marriage of Chiffon, Sylvia and the Phantom, Duce, I think, D-O-U-C-E. And I think that's it, so... Anything?
Yeah, I had heard of him before, but I didn't know anything about his movies. I looked him up on Wikipedia, and he was a Holocaust denier.
Really?
Oh.
So that's fun. And interestingly enough, a couple of these movies were made during the occupation. So that's just something to keep in mind while you're watching them.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm going to pass. Unless I hear some strong opinions that they're worthwhile. Again, we've talked numerous times about separating art from artists.
Right.
Holocaust denying is tough to get away. I can handle one. Von Trier's misogyny. I can't handle Holocaust denying. All right. Well, we are through it. So, piece of flair. Matt, what you got?
I want to give a heads up to everybody that American Beauty, the Andrea Arnold film, the director Beauty? Who made... did I call it American Beauty? American Honey?
I would love to see Andrea Arnold
it
do
is
American
much,
Beauty.
Andrea much better American than, Beauty. It is much better than American Beauty.
It is.
American Honey, she made Fish Tank, which is in the collection. Great movie. It's streaming now on Amazon Prime, and it is... my favorite movie of last year. I loved it so much. Would watch it again right now if somebody put it on. Please go see it if you haven't seen it. Get an Amazon Prime account if you don't have one to watch it, or just rent it. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie.
Or blind buy it. I think I saw the Blu-ray was like $10-$15 on Amazon. So I've thought about it. It's bare bones though. So I part of me maybe wonders, and I haven't checked distribution, but I wonder if maybe this could end up Criterion, because there is a relationship. I love this movie, too.
It's an A24, I think it was an A24 film, but that may have just been U.S. distribution, because it is British. It was you know, funded by the British film company, so
cool.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, actually, I interrupt all the time. That's part of the show. Travis, have you seen American Honey?
I haven't seen American Honey. I've seen Fish Tank, and I saw her short film that was recently on the Tuesday Short in a feature. And I do, after reading Matt's comments on Facebook about how much everyone should go see it, and I definitely would. It's on the watch list now for something to watch as soon as I can.
Yeah, it's a longer movie. It's not quite 3 hours, but, you know, and I remember when I watched it, it just did not seem as long as it was. It went by pretty quickly.
Agreed.
The Blu-ray came out from Lionsgate, which doesn't bode well, but but you never know. Hopefully, and again,
Lionsgate.
Yeah, time. Darn Lionsgate. Travis, you got a piece of flair.
I am going to revisit my piece of flair that was in the Lost episode, because I think it's important that everyone go and check out the Magic Lantern podcast. Cole Verlaine and Erica Long, they're fantastic human beings with a fantastic relationship to film. And it's wonderful to listen to them because they have such a deep, deep passion for the films that they're talking about. They run the gambit from, I think the last two episodes was The Third Man, and then, a classic that everyone should check out. And then Michael Jackson's This Is It, the concert video documentary. And they make you want to see it, the way they talk about it, the way they deconstruct it and talk about their personal experiences with the film really compels you to want to watch the movie as well. And that's the thing that I like about them the most, is that they really do enjoy movies and enjoy watching movies together and being with each other, which makes you want to also enjoy these films. So big, super huge shout out to them. Check out their podcast. It's well worth your time, especially if you enjoy listening to podcasts about films.
Yeah, we didn't bring this up last time, but their show, we kind of have common history. We started Close Up around the same time as they started Magic Lantern, and kind of connected right at the beginning of the shows. And yeah, so I feel like I've known them a while and been linked to the show for a while. They've been on our shows a couple times, and yeah, I agree, great people. And I love my wife and I have a great marriage, but my wife is not going to do a podcast with me. But they, for being a married couple, they have great rapport, and I do too. But we're not going to talk about Kieslowski together, or Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But yeah, I love the variety, and I do love their show. And again, my working situation makes it tougher now to listen to podcasts, so that's one I haven't been able to keep up on as regularly. So I'll rectify that. We have a road trip coming up, so. Yeah, Cole and Erica. Oh, and also, since you revisited from last week, you gave a shout out to Jonathan James. I think he deserves a shout out. He's been a big, good guy, big cheerleader of ours, and just Criterion in general. Just very positive. So
that guy is leading the life I used to lead before I was married with children. He is like at the movies every single night, double features, posting every single thing he's going to go see in every movie he picks up. And yeah, I met with him. We actually saw The Devils at the same time. And
nice.
It was awesome. He's a good guy, and I'm sure he's pumping his fist riding the Green Line right now.
He actually made it a point to like every post in Criterion now, so in the group. So I that tickles my funny belt. But yeah, people like him and people like you and Matt, you guys make me want to go to Boston and come hang out. So maybe one day that'll happen.
Definitely should.
We'll have some ramen.
We'll have some ramen for sure. My piece of flair is a little out of left field. I do this all the time, so I can only come up with so much flair. But mine is actually a screenwrite. All right. You guys heard about the Fyre Festival.
Oh, yes.
There's some guy that wrote a 30-page, fan fiction kind of screenplay about the Fyre Festival, and he cast Leo DiCaprio, E from Entourage, David Blaine, Tobey Maguire, and there's other characters in it. I'm going to link to it. It's like 30 pages. I read it in about 15 minutes. It's very, very funny. It's it's very profane. It works in a lot of pop culture stuff. It works in Kendall Jenner's Pepsi thing. It works in the United, the guy thrown off the thing. So it's very, this is a Criterion now. It's very zeitgeisty, but it's hilarious. And they are the Pussy Posse, the four of them. And David Blaine has a certain card trick that I won't give it away, but even Trump makes an appearance and does that card trick. So yeah, if you have 10-15 minutes, go read that screenplay. It's by a comedian, I forget his name. I'll put the link in the show notes. Funny stuff, Fyre Festival was a disaster, and it deserves our scorn and sarcasm. So
nice.
That's my flair. All right, well, where can we find you guys? Matt, where are you at?
I run the Criterion Considered Facebook group. Come find us, join up, start talking Criterion movies. And I'm Matthew E.G. on Letterboxd and Twitter. Letterboxd is the best place to argue with me about movies, though.
If not Facebook. Facebook's a pretty good place, too. Travis, where are you at?
On Instagram, I'm yoips in a way. There, I finally have something I can
share
with
everyone.
Oh, wow,
you have something. You have a footprint.
Yeah, I still refuse to do the Twitter thing. I know I should, but I'm just lazy. It seems like it would consume too much of my time. And then otherwise than that, you can find me on Facebook in one of the many Criterion-related groups.
That's right. Yeah, you have a good footprint there. Good presence, both of you. I'm there... As I mentioned, you can find the show at the Facebook Criterion group, and I'm not even going to promote the Twitter account anymore. My own Twitter account is AWES505. I tweet a little more than the defunct Criterion Now Twitter group. You can find the show on the Criterion Cast feed. You can find our Criterion Close-Up at CriterionCloseUp.com. I should mention that the Duvivier episode is actually up now, so if you want to go listen to part two of our little series, that's there for the hearing. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. This will not be a lost episode, I promise.
All right.
Yay.
What was lost is now found. So sorry about that. My bad.
No worries. It happens.